Hello and welcome to the What's Cooking podcast. This is our Adjusting With mini-series where we're chatting to some of our past guests to hear updates on how their businesses are going and highlight any new initiatives that they might be working on at the moment. They'll be talking us through how they're adapting to challenges and generally keeping going during this time.
If you want to find out more about these guests that we're chatting to, and we definitely recommend you do that, you can scroll back through our archive and find whole episodes with these guests. You can learn about their businesses and what they're about. We really hope you enjoy these mini episodes and that you find some kind of comfort or inspiration in what they have to say. How's it, how are you? How's it going?
Everybody's doing amazing. It's been the craziest 6 weeks of my 25-year career, I'll tell you that much. The biggest highlight right now is basically, you know, as per usual, City Harvest does 35 to 40 tons of food a week as an average. We've just about to, I think, hit somewhere in the mid-300s in 5 weeks. So we have basically doubled our intake and output in response to COVID. We kind of saw it coming, and it came basically on the Tuesday before shutdown, where a lot of the restaurant groups had preempted it because they knew it was going to happen. That was our busiest week we've ever had at 69.4 tons, I think. So the day before, I kind of had the foresight, luckily, with our team to say, we're going to need another depot. So we got onto our landlords. Within 2 hours, we had another set of keys. So luckily we have another 4,000 square foot depot, which is just full of pallets of ambient food. Yeah, and obviously having a few of our lovely team furloughed and some working from home. There's just the three of us in the office. And, you know, so it's been inbound and outbound nonstop. And I think the biggest thing that we've seen within the 300 charities that we do support, about 87 had to close due to COVID, which is understandable because they're big church halls and feeding hundreds a night, etc. So the actual format of what we do had to change overnight because the need for food bank size stuff, which is all retail, so your pastas, your beans, etc. That was the biggest challenge, I would say, because that's not normally, you know, what we request for more about fresh, etc. So it's been quite the journey.
Yeah, you've had such a journey. I mean, in such a short space of time. Can we start off from kind of understanding that the restaurants are closing? I came to see you just after the restaurants had closed.
You did see the bedlam, didn't you?
I just couldn't believe I've been saying to so many people, you know, we're talking hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of food, and you just instantly had to step up, like you said. I mean, getting that extra depot is incredible. Are you also using the Acton one? Are you also using the Spitalfields one at the moment?
No, Spitalfields at present is on hold purely because obviously with the decreased team for myself, I wanted everybody under one roof.
Yeah.
As the things have settled a little bit, but day by day, everything was changing. So locations of this group, actually, we need stuff here. It was a logistical nightmare. You know, groups trying to find places as they got kicked out of churches where they could operate or whatever, you know, venues, community centers, etc., which all had to be shut. So the reactionary was, it was literally like the office turned into a military training room with posters and pages all over. And it was just crazy. It was absolutely crazy. And, you know, the varying different foods that we were getting, you know, we had every head chef from the Hawksmoor here, you know, giving us beautiful ribs of beef. And I mean, you saw most of it. And so it was a massive glut as restaurant groups closed down, and quite rightly they reacted. I mean, the Savoy, the list goes on. There's about 110 different new food donors to us that we'd never met. And, you know, so for us, it was fantastic to get that exposure. You know, Honest Burgers, you know, new best friends, they had 2 tons of their chuck beef, which is beautiful, which they then minced to turn into their own burgers. So they weren't making burgers, so they made us probably over 5,000 ready meals, which they would cook fresh daily, label them up, Bidfood would deliver them. It was just amazing. And then I was like, Tom, there's no more. Oh, they made a lasagna with a wild garlic pesto. I could taste it now. It was amazing. Because obviously we were at that point doing 12, 15 hour days. We were like, we need to eat. And it was always my Friday treat to have an Honest Burger ready meal. So the reaction from hospitality, who are the worst hit, it breaks my heart. It's the second largest employer in the country, and who knows what's going to happen. But typical of hospitality, they just get on with it. They sort stuff out. They come up with innovative ideas. So there's, and despite all of this, there's some very, very cool things going on. So it was first the restaurants, and then the next phase. So that was week one, as I break it down. Week two then became their suppliers. Because obviously they're a very different supply stream to retail. So, you know, your fishmen, your veg guys, your all the traders, you know, Spitalfields, New Covent Garden, that have all worked with us before. So we saw huge donations, actually, not even just surplus. How can we help? I mean, Spitalfields Market chair called and said, listen, every trader wants to donate. It's not even surplus. It's top, you know, top line vegetable. And next thing I know, six pallets turned up. So it's been a... Yeah, I mean, there's so many stories. I need a pub to open in order for us to sit down and make lists of all of this because we haven't had time. But yeah, and, you know, in reaction to it, you know, the sympathy I personally have for everyone in hospitality and supplying hospitality is, you know, they're, yeah, we don't know what the outcome is going to be. And as we see, a lot of businesses are going into receivership. I mean, that's just, it's very, very stressful times in general. But what it did show was that the new world, as we're calling it, which is post-COVID, where the demand for our service is going to triple. It already has. We have 300 charities to support. We have now have 300 more on a waiting list. And, you know, so unemployment is going to skyrocket. Food insecurity is going to get 10 times worse. So, yeah, we just keep on trucking. It's the only way to put it.
And how's your surplus now? So you've gone from fresh, you went from kind of the restaurants, hospitality, then to suppliers, and then how's it looking now? Are people still donating? What's the...
Yeah, I mean, we obviously have our original donors, which were great. They're still all there, except for the ready meal kind of line, because that's all going to retail or to the NHS, which is understandable. But we've now managed to, through this, be able to... get a new bank of great relationships and great donors. You know, there's one Box Food, which is my oldest daily fish supplier I've known for 20 years. They got into a co-op with a meat supplier and a veg supplier to do home delivery, so commercialized boxes, and in return, they then donate the same quantity to us. So there's some very, very cool things going on. There's various... few things I can't talk about yet, but you know, all our lovely chefs of the city, you know, their chefs can't sit down. You know, I know it's hard enough for every. I can't relate what it's like to work from home. I just like to have a day in my bed, to be honest. I'm polar opposite to most poor people out there. You know, like you guys having to sit at home. But the chefs, again, the hospitality industry has stepped up massively because they are now making kind of the same format as Honest and getting collectives of different chefs, and I can't, there's press releases coming out, but there's some really exciting stuff, but you will hear about it, you know, that are going to make hundreds or even thousands a week. So to see the community and to see industry in such a bizarre time we're in, it's just invigorating and loving. I love it.
So obviously some of the charities you normally work with have had to cease operating, but can you tell us about some of the new organizations you're now helping?
Yeah, so there's some, obviously the government's reaction to this was to open what they call mega hubs by council. The idea was that because the format was changed, it would be giant food banks, basically, because with the closures of the existing group where these people needed to go, basically the government had to step up. Now that's been an interesting journey. I mean, Chelsea and Kensington is one of the best. I mean, they just got on it, but every council is so different that they're, you know, it's taking a little bit longer because of bureaucracy and red tape and who's going to lead the project, where in my head it's like, just get a warehouse, open it up, and we will bring you food and you will give it to people. But, you know, every council does it differently. So we have about 6 mega hubs in which we are, you know, supporting daily, as well as some fantastic projects. My new favorite is North Kensington Church. So Danny, who's one of Jamie Oliver's ex-chefs, they're feeding about 180 to 200 handicapped children who don't actually have access to what's, you know, school dinners, etc. And what they are doing is fantastic. I mean, you've got some of the best chefs, and they're doing packed lunches, they're doing dinner packs, they're doing everything. So there's some very, very cool, you know, and it's also, it's people from industry that have suddenly started these new groups because they have the ability and they have the foresight and the project planning, because it does take time to do this. So, you know, there's some great new ones, but we also have to, you know, continue to fully, we could take on a few more. We're probably about 30 extra, but we have to remember that 87 are closed. So when they come back on board, we still only have 11 vans. We do have an extra warehouse, but unfortunately it's not ours. You know, it's just on loan. So we have to be quite cautious to, you know, get as much food out there as we can, but also not to shoot ourselves in the foot when we go back to, these start to come back on board. So it's, it's just the mega hubs that are, you know, we can send full pallets of stuff, a full pallet of yogurts, a full pallet of San Pellegrino, or whatever happens to, you know, come in. There's also a change in the world where some of these now, I'm just doing a piece of work to find out what their storage capacity is. You know, what's their refrigeration like? Do they have freezer space? Because we don't even have to touch some of the donations. They could actually just be directed straight to them. So a lot of the freight companies, you know, your Bid Foods have been amazing. They gave us a refrigerated truck for 2 weeks to get 18 extra pallets of food in. And, you know, so everybody's really, really pulled together. And the offers that we have had of support have been, you know, I could have 200 drivers from 11 different companies just driving around for me, but we don't, you know. So it's been, the industry's really stepped up. And I think from my point of view, it is the future, and it will become normal to do this stuff as a business, is to donate or, you know, but you know me, I get a very optimistic person, so I always see positive in everything, but I do think the demand is going to skyrocket, and it is time for industry and the private sector, unfortunately, because the government won't be able to sustain it, you know, to get involved. You know, there's one guy starting next week, making 3,000 ready meals. He said, well, we probably won't be able to do this when we reopen. I'm like, of course you can't. But he's saying, but we can do 200 a week on Mondays because it's really quiet. So it's kind of building this, just building this foundation of what will come out of it. For us, it's about sustaining what we do for the future.
Yeah, but you're right. It's, you know, this whole situation is really growing the wider awareness of these kinds of issues. And that's the thing. Even if someone who's able to do a lot now can do an eighth of that when things return to whatever they return to, then that's something, isn't it?
Exactly. And also it's down to the individual now. You know, it's these chefs going, I want to do something. We want to do, and especially chefs, when you worked, I was one, you work 12 hours a day. All you got time is to sleep and eat and have a couple of pints on a weekend and that's it. And I think the benefit to them as well is that, you know, the number of friends I talk to, they're like, I don't feel like I'm doing anything to help because I have to stay home. And I'm like, I can't imagine, that must be awful. I don't feel that. Fran slept for 20 hours yesterday. That's how tired she was, you know, and she said, I can't come. And I was like, gosh, just stop, you know, because it's been Fran, Sigourney and myself in the office, and obviously the amazing warehouse team and our volunteers have just been, I don't know, ever want any of them to go back to work. Of course I do, but you know, it's just been such a happy place to be. So it seems like we're still normal, but at the same time, we're not at all. Like it's the emotional side has been a real learning, in the sense that every single one of us has had a breakdown. Like I was at one point through the peak of all of this and the craziness, you know, I absolutely lost it. And I just lay on a pallet of apples. They were wrapped, don't worry. And I just, in the fetal position, I just had a little cry. And Jason, my warehouse manager, came up. He's like, I can't even give you a hug. I'm like, I'm fine. So everybody's been through this emotional roller coaster, because at the same time, we've also got, you know, the phones going red hot from individuals saying, I'm stuck in my house. I'm 82 years old. Sorry, I'm going to cry. You know, we've had, you know, just been tossed in at every angle, and you can't hang up on them. You just have to give them advice to contact their council. And, you know, we don't usually get that desperation because we are suppliers to those who deal with those lovely people. You know, so it's been, you know, at one point there's 10, 15 calls a day, and there's only so much of it you can take, and then you break. you know, which is understandable. You're working on heightened level. You're doing four times the job you ever had at a speed that is, you know, nobody's sleeping. This is now everybody's a lot better, but to watch that journey of everybody and then everyone just to, I think what made me cry about 2 weeks ago was like a funny video. And I just was like, oh, so yeah, it's a front line. It's its own front line.
Yeah, absolutely. You are. That's just, you're doing absolute vital, key, essential work. And it is what you've been through in the past few weeks is just totally overwhelming.
I can't even digest it, you know, hun. Like I sit there and every time I go, oh my God, do you remember when this happened? Or do you, oh wow, when did that? And you just, it comes back to you like you've got a blank mind because you're just going forward. But I wish I had had some, you guys actually behind me recording the whole thing.
Yeah,
you will naturally,
you can't process it all. There's so much that's going on and you're just going, you're just doing and you're actioning it as and when it comes in, but there's no, yeah, you're not properly processing it.
It's just, yeah, it's funny, even today, like I think Fran and I were sitting outside. I've luckily had our board of trustees that said I really, really need some help, which is true, you know, but we also have to be very close, very careful with social distancing. And I mean, how, you've been here, it's a tiny place, you know, and making sure I have to take care of everybody, you know, that's quite a weight on your shoulders. I love it. Don't get me wrong. It's a part of my personality, but at some point, so you just, I was kind of like, whew, it is getting a little bit much. And then you suddenly remind yourself, wow, look at what we've done. And, you know, as a team, we've become, it was a family before. And now it's like, I don't know, an ancestral family. That sounds probably wrong, but you know, there is, everybody has had their moments, and it's been a really, and all, everybody's being impacted themselves by, you know, Gary, one of our drivers, and I love my Gary. He's just this, you know, Gary, the charmer. And he, you know, his mum's in a home, and so he can't see her, but then his nurses, we sent some treats over for the carers, because though they've kind of gotten forgotten in this, because they're not NHS, and you know, they're just slogging away as well. So we just sent the carers some lovely care package. And, you know, the next thing, they let him wave at his mum through his window. And yeah, and it's just these little things where you forget we're doing all this, but also our team are going through their own things. You know, four of our team have to be furloughed because they have children that have asthma or, you know, all of this. And they're heartbroken because they want to be here. You know, but it can't be. And then you've got the team that's working from home from, you know, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., you know, Jane, our fundraiser, and Fiona, who does all our comms, and Laura, our CEO. I mean, they kind of put a lovely bubble around us because all the incoming of everything, you know, from funding, people going, oh, how can we help you? You know, we had to have that resource to pass that over. So it also proves a very remote way of working as well, because we have to grow, but you've seen the size of our office. Until we have a new home, we'll be sitting on laps or have to get bunk beds or something.
Yeah, can we talk about your fundraiser? You've actually got a live fundraiser at the moment on GoFundMe. People can go to your website to get the link to that, or Instagram, City Harvest London. Let us know what the fundraiser is about, what you're raising money for. You've already bought a new van.
Yeah, well, you've actually, I mean, fundraising is so nice to have a fundraiser on the team because, you know, Laura's done the whole thing for 5 years and raised millions. And, you know, just to have a professional and somebody that can, this is the ultimate time, because in times of disaster, in times of crisis, people will put their heart on the line and say, what do you need? What do you need? So in the beginning, it was, you know, it's about keep the fact that we are still operating. So, you know, the number of people that are just impressed with that, let alone everything plus, plus, plus that we've achieved. So I think from the GoFundMe is, you know, it's there, the X turn, and that's great for everyone. Just pop a fiver in there, whatever, you know, every tiny little bit helps. But the support from old existing funders or new people saying, we've looked what we've done and here's an Insta grant, like within overnight. And I mean, Jane would obviously be far more knowledgeable about this than myself, but you know, it's been very, very successful. And again, that's another lifeline for our charity for the future. Because, you know, as I've said previously, we need food, because we would never buy a thing in our lives. That's not what we believe in. It's all donated and it's all surplus. So food is our commodity. Fundraising is our sales line. So, you know, without those two, if there's suddenly, say we had way too much money and not enough food, it actually has to be balanced. in order for the growth to happen. So if you add a new van, and you know, it's we're now looking, you won't believe it, at this point at what our future is going to look like. And we're speaking future as in this year, you know, because there is 300 charities that need our service. How do we make that happen? So we've got to have the funding, we've got to have the ability and the tools to do the job, so aka vans and a bigger home. So these all, everything has to come in at the same time. So that's been relatively successful. Now we're in week 5 or 6 for what we call from kickoff, and we can now suddenly sit down and breathe and say, okay, that wasn't quite enough, so let's do some more. Because we have to be able to be able, you know, to get as much food out there as we can. I mean, there's still concerns about what's going to happen to food supply chain. You know, we've already seen not only ourselves, but other rescue charities. You know, last week or the week before, we couldn't have it. There was not a vegetable to be had. So even New Spitalfields Market was saying at New Covent Garden, obviously the borders are closed. Where does the majority of our produce come from? The continents. So it was being dripped. So I was like, oh, it's kind of like a practice for Brexit. Anyways, it's not politics. So it's things that you wouldn't expect. You wouldn't expect that there would be no vegetables. There's only potatoes. There's going to be asparagus because our asparagus season's starting. So I think it's also making people look internally to what we can actually grow ourselves, because who knows how long this is going to last. Who knows if it won't come back. And I think self-sufficiency within our glorious country would be a good thing.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We just spoke to Ellie and she mentioned how it's just raising and highlighting the food system. A lot of people not understanding where their food comes from and all the different processes that are involved with that, from workers coming to pick, you know, everyone's saying that there's asparagus in the fields waiting to be picked and no one's here to pick it. And yeah, it's at a weird time because we're in that hungry gap here where there's actually not that much British produce in April, and we're just going into that amazing period where it's all growing, it's all starting, but we need those people to pick.
But I don't understand why we're not picking them as a nation. Why are we flying in Eastern Europeans to pick our fruit and veg when it could easily be done here, you know? And bless them, that's not getting political, but you know, every single Romanian, Polish, Bulgarian person that comes over here to work and have an opportunity, or you know, pick in fields or do potato grading, whatever, you'll never find a Briton there. You know, it's because they just won't do it. And it's like, well, you're maybe furloughed now, but those who don't are going to be made unemployed, it's going to have to go that way. So anyways, that's just a personal opinion, because we now have 10 times more hungry people and food rotting, which I don't, oh, sorry, if you can see my face right now. It really, really is wrong on so, so many levels. But
it's just, you know, we've said that before when we were interviewing you, it's just that frustration that there's so much available, the supply, but the actual infrastructure to get it in the right place is lacking. It's just such a waste on all levels.
And to the you know, the commercial food world, to them it's just a commodity. They don't care what happens to it, you know, or you know, they'll just think, oh, the farmer's, a friend of mine's a potato farm, he grows purely for McCain's and just for McDonald's chips. And you know, they've just cancelled his whole entire year's yield because they've got freezers full of McDonald's chips.
So what's he going to do?
Well, he's still planting them, but they're not going to be worth anything, you know. He said, "I've got to do it because we can't leave the fields. They've been, you know, 25 years. They've been spud fields, and you can't leave them for a year. I mean, I'm not a farmer, but it makes perfect sense. But also, at the end of the day, it's still going to cost him to grow those crops." And I said, well, maybe by harvest, everything will have been changed. And he says, I highly, highly doubt it, because there's a backlog of, you know, a majority of British produce is only used, you know, from sugar beet to potatoes. It's all for frozen product. And, you know, apart from our lovely strawberry and asparagus seasons and this and that, most of it is doesn't actually even hit our shelves. It goes into frozen produce, or, you know, gets exported, which is interesting. But so the knock-on effect, I mean, we sit here going, we know what's going on, but the knock-on effect to producers, to suppliers, to manufacturers, to distributors is going to be it's probably going to kill a lot more than this little virus, I hate to say, because there will be, I mean, we can only project, the US has just released a list of projections of 40% unemployment. I think 124 million people have now signed on for government support. And, you know, so it's a pandemic, but now it's going to be a global commercial issue. But yeah, we just keep on trucking and do what we can.
What you're doing there is helping so many people. It is amazing. Obviously, City Harvest relies on kind of an army of volunteers. Are you getting a lot of new volunteers? Is it mostly kind of familiar faces who are now able to help with a lot more of their time not working?
The volunteers have been just awesome is the only way I can put it. So obviously, with the increase of food coming in, etc., you know, it was the onslaught of people signing up to our app to come and volunteer. I mean, I'd have to ask Fran, but it's in the thousands. But the thing is, we also, I could have had 20 people in here when we really need it. So when you saw it, you know, but because we cannot allow more than 6 people on site, but luckily we now have the 2 warehouses, you know, it's the grade and the level of this new slew of volunteers. Like I said, I wish they never had to go back to work. They, again, have become a part of the and they're repetitive. So how our app works is you have to book your slots in, and if it's not available, it's not available. And if you just, somebody, I think one of our guys, one of the volunteers had booked every single slot and then never turned up. So we just, you know, it's just valuable people we need, you know. So they'd have to automatically been like, your shift has been canceled because, you know, it's peak time and it's 6 people at a time, and and all of them, I mean, we've had everything from doctors to owners of restaurant groups, which has been really interesting. Quite well-known restaurant groups, you know, that have just come and started driving. They're like, I just need to do something. You know, I've got 200 furloughed staff, which is all good and well, but I don't have the cash flow to pay 4 months of payroll before I get this furlough grant back. And then you start thinking like that. You think, of course not. You know, especially in hospitality and restaurants, you live month by month. You don't have a £10 million reserve. It's, you know, you got your top line and your bottom line, and that's how you operate. And then, so yeah, so doctors, restaurant owners, lots and so many offers of furlough work, homework. You know, oh, we'd love to, can we redesign your website? Can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do that? And it's been so, so lovely. But also, we're very restricted on our actual team and who can be like, yeah, and give them a brief to do this and that, because now we're coming out of it. We're thinking, okay, this, you can do this, you can do that. You know, I think it's one of the guys from Wasabi are making a kids training video about food waste. And, you know, so there's been some great little initiatives out there. But it's actually having that person within City Harvest to go, yes, this is, you know, it's lovely. We can't do that. We're not even sleeping, you know? So the offers, I mean, they've come in. This is, again, we've had the food side and then the offers of help. We've just made notes everywhere. And then to collate all of that and just go, you know, it's insane. So we'll have a very good bank of resource and hopefully food to continue to come in. You know, is always our top worry, because everyone's like, oh, you can buy this surplus from us. I'm like, we would never, ever buy anything. It is against every single one of our ethics. And not only that, that's not what we do. We're also saving millions of or tons of whatever it is of carbon. So yeah, I think it'll be, if I could write a thesis on it by the end, I probably end up doing so. It's just been a roller coaster of positivity. It sounds like I shouldn't say that, but it has been. And hopefully it will build our future, ensure that we can keep on doing what we do on a much, much larger scale. Because we are very, very aware that the whole world is changing and our services, we're going to be super in demand. So got to keep the food coming and got to keep the cash coming, and we can just keep on doing it.
Yeah. And I mean, we were talking in our episode with you last year, how you could kind of write a Bible for others to go on and do it. And it is so, I'm not sure actually what's going on in other cities, but obviously there's still that huge demand in huge cities across the UK. And I mean, I hope there are organizations out there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's always Fair Share, who've been around for 20 years, are fantastic. You know, they've been working so closely with us, you know, making sure that they can send 2, 3, 4 pallets of veg, or, you know, they got offered 25 pallets of lettuce. I can't take 25 pallets of lettuce. So they can, because they have the distribution, they have 20 warehouses or probably more than that. So they have really been fantastic, because the more food that can get out there, the better. You know, that's sad. This is, we don't live in a competitive world. It's not about press, it's not about profile, it's not about any of that. It's like purely get the food to the people and then you can pat yourselves. Not that we ever would pat ourselves on the back, but you know, it's a pretty simplistic thing. There's shed loads of food that is tentatively going into the skip, and instead there's lots of hungry people. It's, you know, it's the most simplistic formula there is.
And do you feel like that supply is going to continue? I can see that it's a worry.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a worry. I mean, that basically, to anybody who's lived, it comes from a commercial world, the food supply is basically our sales. That's our commodity. You know, the funding is, it's a kind of, do you turn it on top of its head? The funding is in order to keep the operation going. You know, so it's like top line, bottom line sort of thing, it with a different commodity, not cash. So supply, yes, it is concerning. You know, we had peaks of, you know, tens and tens of tons this, you know, which we said, could we sustain doing 100 tons a week? I mean, yes, we could, obviously with a new home and et cetera, but it's ensuring that surplus does still come our way and that it's still being manufactured, because, you know, we, with this veg crisis a couple of weeks ago, Fairshare didn't have vegetables. I mean, Fairshare, you know, they're, and that's because obviously everything's in holding sheds or ripening rooms. So be it avocados, be it any veg, you know, apples, et cetera, et cetera. Veg life in ripening rooms or in shedded is much less unless it's root vegetables, because all we've had is carrots and potatoes. Whereas fruit can be sustained for longer. So it was pallets of pineapple 1 week, then it was pallets of raspberries. But that is our existing six-week stock, I think these guys, the buyers, work on. And then they're waiting, and then they get refilled from the continent. So that is all gone, basically. You know, we're seeing quite a little bit of it. So because it's not coming into the country or drip-fed, you know, the surplus end is, retailers are very different. It's all pre-packed. It's all, you know, it's different to said pallets for market or into hospitality. So everything goes into your mega markets, your Billingsgate, your Smithfields, your New Covent Gardens, and then that becomes into the hospitality industry. So it's a very different supply line from retail. But yeah, I mean, we'll just have to monitor it day by day. I think we're still up about 55, 60 tons this week. So it's not a problem. But if everything falls out next week, then we have to, you know, that's when we go into, ooh, shit mode, sorry. But, you know, that is panic stations in the sense. But the supply chain don't even know what's happening in the supply chain.
Yeah.
So that's the very, very, very end of the pecking order. You know, there's nobody, because you never sign contracts with donors or anything. It's not illegal. It's not a financial transaction. It's just a nice to do, and everybody benefits, you know, from donor to City Harvest to the end user or to the people that need it. It will have to keep going. And I'm very, very convinced that it will. And I think with all of our new, I'm probably going to say we have 200 new friends within the food world just because of this. You know, I had the exec chef and the food director from CH & Co. just come and drop stuff off themselves. And we hadn't had visitors for ages. And you know how we love a visitor, and we love to show people around. And they come in here and they go, y'all are crazy. And we love what you do. So here's lots of food, or here's lots of money. So yeah, these two rocked up. And I can't remember, they donated, I think it was from one of their events kitchens that they were just dismantling. And this was in the middle of this. And I thought, you know what, I'd just love to. I was like, guys, you want to stay for like half an hour and have a chat, and we'll walk around. I'll show you the other depot, and, you know, kind of doing that, reminding myself as well what we do and how we do it. And when you pitch that to new people, and then you feel good in yourself, because we used to do that every day. And now we're just like, what's going on? Where are we going? Da, da, da. So, but anyways, going back to this topic. So the boys came. And I, since then, I mean, I think they've donated money. Every single one of their sites has been informed, because obviously a lot of the, so say, University of Law are letting us drain three of their campuses of all their ambient stock, and they've got chilled, like long life stuff, because they just went on to lockdown, and now they're not going to open till September, or maybe not till next year. We don't know. So they're all kind of going, this food is sitting there. And then their probably first thought is like, ooh, mice, rats, you know, because the rice, the rat catcher ain't going in to put bait boxes down, if you think about it. So all of this, and then they suddenly go, well, I'm not going to put this in the bin. So it's created another new kind of revenue, because we've always tried to work with contract caterers as well. And I was saying this to the guys, and I was just like, you know, we can't have your sandwich platter that's been sitting out for 4 hours, or your end of your salad bar on a Friday. We've said all of this before, but they're now very much so coming up with ideas, a bit like word of mouth catering. So it's all, you know, these sorts of things now with contract caterers, we're in there going, they understand what we do now. And we can go and clear every university. And that'll be about 8 to 10 tons of food next week. So yeah, it's exciting times. And I sound really, everyone's like, I'm really happy. And everyone's like, why? I'm like, oh, it's hard to explain. Between breakdowns, of course.
Yeah, it's just completely overwhelming. And yeah. I mean, you should be proud of what you're doing there. You know, you are servicing so many people who are in need. So
it's great. And actually, with going back to volunteers, you know, these are, like I said, lawyers, doctors, everything. And they're just like always, people walk through the threshold of City Harvest. Nobody cares what you do. Nobody cares who you are, where you're from. It's just everybody's here to do the same thing. And what we have seen is, you know, we have our regulars, our daily regulars. Some of them have had to go home because of sick parents, etc. They will all be coming back because then they as well are crying, going, we miss you guys. We're like, we miss you too. But how this new slew of volunteers have, again, just come in and just got it and just got on with it. And the number come up to me and go, thank you so much for letting us come here. I'm like, what? Thank you for coming to help us. They're like, no, this makes us feel like we actually have a purpose. So everybody wins. Everybody always wins in City Harvest. It's great.
That's the thing. There is some really positive stuff to be seen happening. And and it's, you know, and that's, it's good to focus on those things rather than the negatives, I think.
Well, even my social, my friends and stuff, they're like, you're so happy. We're miserable. I'm like, sorry. It's just all weird.
Yeah, totally. Is there anything else that you want to include or kind of signpost to what you would like from people?
Yeah, I mean, everybody, volunteers were amazing. You can always sign on because obviously when people start to go back to work and we'll still need, or even if you just want to come check out what we do, it is kind of cool. You know, it's always funding. Have a look at our website, have a look at our GoFund. Obviously we have lots of other, our own link on our webpage, etc. And then anybody that's out in the food world that, you know, wants to get in touch with ideas or things that might be able to be done or resource towards food. If you know anyone that, you know, I can't imagine how much food is stuck in buildings in the city.
I'm just thinking of all these schools, gyms, there's so many places that have got fridges or cabinets that will have things in them.
Yeah, and storerooms full of baked beans and pasta and rice and everything that's needed. And I think the most annoying one, the other nightmare for us has been hand sanitizer. So I was before I went away for a quick week, thank goodness. And I'd ordered lots. I thought, oh, we're probably going to need this. And then now I had to pay £75 for 5 liters of refill. Like, it's insane. And everybody has tried to get it for me. Like, Crystal Palace Football Club gave me some the other day, thank goodness, you know, like, but I've been very lucky. Mercedes is a big, because all our vans are Mercedes, have been huge. They were straight on the phone, what do you guys need? I think Laura said to them, oh, Nikki could probably really do with a car because she comes from East London every day and I'd rather, so they just gave me a car. Like, thanks! Because we are, it's so crucial to operate that, you know, until now, we didn't have a number two that could suddenly take over if I got sick or if, you know, we are a charity. We don't have this like massive team that can just all help out. And every single day I take a different route across London. It was amazing. Traffic's getting really bad right now. Stay home, people. And, you know, I could be driving through Trafalgar Square at 7 a.m, be the only person there. It was really, really cool. But I drive through going, how much sanitizer's in there? How much gloves are in there? I bet you they have 10,000 masks. And it's like, somebody give me the keys to all these buildings because there'll be so much PPE in there as well. But it's interesting times. Everybody that's out there, please have a look at our webpage. Bung us your pint that you would be, or five that you would be drinking tonight because it's Friday. Check out Fiona, who's head of our comms, is doing wicked stuff on Instagram. I love it. I never look at it through the day, but I go home and I have a cheek and I'm like, oh, and the number of people that are just so excited about us. So that's a great one. And if you're in the food industry or you're a chef and you've got ideas or anything, just get in touch with me because let's do some fun stuff that benefits those in need.
Perfect.
Yay.
Thanks, Nikki.
So good to speak to you.
Oh, you too, guys.